Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Pedigree, Aaron Boone's brother, Bob Boone's son, and then the grandfather.
Total doper.
Who was the grandfather?
Who cares?
Three generation of big leaguers. Who cares and a doper? Man, who am I talking to?
He was a doper. Brett Boone? Come on.
I don't know. I didn't give him any dope. But anyway, he, after he retired, remember mostly with that great Mariners team that lost in the playoffs. They won 116 games.
116.
Came up with the Reds. Or did he come up with Seattle? Anyway, he played for the Reds. I digress. The he, after he had retired, he came back after a year out of the game. And he went to spring training with the Twins. And he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. And he said, you know what? I will now be happily retired because I know I stink.
Right.
I kind of thought maybe I still got it and the pitchers are going right by me. I'm too old. I can't react. My reaction times are down. So I don't blame the guy. When you retire and then you think, I can still play this game, it must eat at you a little bit.
Yeah, well, think about a guy like Jerry Rice, who during the tail end of his career, at one point, for me anyway, there's a little bit of sadness to it. It wasn't quite as bad as Willie Mays, you know, limping away his final years in a Met uniform or whatever it was. But I just hate to see an all-time great at so far less than that. And it's like one thing to like, okay, you've gotten older, father time, he always wins. Your skills declined, but you were still respectable, and now you're gone. We'll see you at the Hall of Fame ceremony. And I just felt like Jerry must really, really love football to have put himself through that. I mean, he had to know that he wasn't that Jerry Rice anymore, but he just kept going for it. I don't know if it's the attention he loved or just, hey, I love this game. You're going to have to rip the jersey off me.
I think that's what it is. You have the rest of your life to never be in the NFL right. again. So if you have a 1% chance, I think you take it. 888-957-9570, Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. 510 says, Michael Erbs, it's interesting. Michael Erbs, that actor that played Art Howe in quote-unquote Moneyball, is one of my favorite, more serious-looking actors. I think that was an honor for Howe to be played by him. That's from Halftime J, talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman. I don't think we're talking about the, and now this is a guy who died of an overdose, Philip Seymour Hoffman, which is obviously tragic, but I don't think we're calling into question his acting acumen.
Right.
I think we're talking about just the aesthetics of a fit guy being played by a big fat guy.
Right. I mean, it was if Jonah Hill's character was Paul D. Podesta,
who was skinny,
right, then that would have been his biggest swing and miss physically, matching the actor and the star of the movie. I just he was, it was almost like they did it on purpose. How can we piss? Billy Bean's probably in the back somewhere, standing behind the director. How do we have? Do we have anybody who looks less healthy than this guy? Oh, this is the fattest, sloppiest guy you could find. Okay, cool.
Let's go to San Jose. We have Agile, Agile Rabbit, La Pan Agile. How you doing?
What is your address, yeah?
Hey, boys, doing well.
That was French.
Yeah, I had a fantasy football question. I have Raheem Mostert and Matt Breida on my teams, and I'm trying to figure out who's going to have a bigger impact in terms of red zone yards, maybe catches out of the backfield. If you had to pick between which back to start, who would you lean towards?
Well, I think that's a no-brainer. I'd go with Breida, who's going to get way more touches. And you might say, well, in the red zone, maybe it's Mostert. I still would lean Breida.
Okay. And how does Jeff Wilson factor into all this as well? Is he more of a explosive, like, within the 5-yard line, or is Shanahan going to do a running back by committee, you think, for the next few weeks?
Well, this guy was on the practice squad, you know, a couple of weeks ago, so he's probably going to be a third option. They do like him, but I think he's one of those guys that'll probably be like, we have the lead, let's run the clock out, and if they don't have the lead, he probably won't get a lot of touches.
Okay, awesome. Where are you guys watching the game?
I will be watching it from Everton Jones because I'll be doing the Raiders pre and post from there.
I'm going to go visit you.
Are you going to go visit Agile or me?
Both of you.
Where are you going, Ajeel?
I'm going to the game, baby. I'm in section 219, row 18. I'm wearing my red Justin Smith jersey.
Oh, that's cool. Are you in? Is that the side that that gets blacked out by the white hot intensity of the sun?
Yeah. So I'm debating, like, I don't know, a tank top or a t-shirt. I think a jersey might be a little much.
Oh, go tank top, dude. Anytime you can rock a sunburn that has the tank top white fade, yeah, you go with that. Chicks dig it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for that. And I will preface it by saying I'm not a fantasy guy, but if you ask me a question, I'll give you an answer.
Yeah.
Why not? By the way, Justin Smith, he had a tattoo on his bicep, the Anheuser-Busch logo. How much do you have to love Budweiser?
A lot.
Or Bud Light or whatever it was to get the Anheuser-Busch
logo. Why does that
logo
not surprise me, though, right? Just everything we know about Justin Smith, well, he's salt of the earth guy, cowboy.
He's about as tough as it comes. When your traditional rival is the Cowboys and yet they still called you cowboy,
yeah.
That's not bad.
What is he doing these days?
I don't know.
I'm surprised he's not involved in
football. Let's get him on
profile.
The horn, and we'll bring him in next segment.
Yeah, let's go, Ryan. Book somebody. Let's go.
Now, back to Urban and Tittle.
Thank you so much. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle and Michael Urban with you. 95.7 The Game. Take you until 5 o'clock. Courtesy of the Dialpad guest line, we are now joined by our friend Kyle Glazer. He is part of course, the Baseball Writers Association of America. And Kyle, it's funny, when the news broke about Andy Green getting let go by the Padres, and we just kind of joked, ha-ha, how about Bruce Bochy? And then the show went on the air a little over 2 hours ago, and the list was up to 5 names. Now I'm seeing over a dozen. I don't think it's going to be Bochy, but some people are saying Moises Alou, he's in the building. Rod Barajas is the interim. But just real quick, the other names I'm seeing right now, Josh Bard, Carlos Beltran, Eric Chavez, Joe Espada, Joe Girardi, Raul Ibanez, Mark Loretta, Joe Maddon, Mike Socha, and Ron Washington. To me, the one that's most intriguing is Mike Socha. He knows the area. He knows the division. He knows the league. What are you hearing?
You know, this process really, really just started. I mean, I think right now you're seeing these names kind of come out. A lot of them are going to kind of fall away here. In terms of what we're hearing early now, I mean, the reports are out there now. But again, this firing happened a couple of hours ago. We're still so early that I don't think it's totally 100% responsible to declare a favorite here and now, right this minute. There's a lot of things that have to play out in this process, a lot of interviews still to be done, and we'll see what shakes out. That's a pretty, you know, wide range of candidates, a lot of experience levels. Padres are going to talk to a lot of people and see if anyone blows their doors off in the interview room.
Are you kind of surprised? I mean, obviously the results aren't there, but they got to pay him, what, 2 more seasons after this? I mean, they're A.J. Preller willing to bite the bullet on that cash then.
So I think the surprise more than the money is just the Padres hired Andy Green knowing that this was not going to be a winning team for 5-6 years. They brought him in specifically because he had a lot of experience in the minor leagues. He was really good about having kind of the full organizational awareness. Some big league managers just kind of know their big league team and have a little bit of knowledge about a couple minor leaguers, couldn't care less otherwise. But Andy was really, really invested in knowing everything top to bottom in the Padres organization. They brought him in because he was going to be kind of as aware of the top prospects in A-ball and their development, which is where the Padres were. They needed a manager to, you know, have full awareness of the organization for a 5-6 year window. But with that, the Padres have just played so listless over the last couple weeks. And, you know, A.J. Preller even last year said around the time of the draft, this is the last year we're going to be picking in the top 10. Well, that didn't happen. They picked in the top 10 again this year. And now this year, again, there just hasn't been the step forward that the Padres and their fans wanted to see. So I think it just got to a point where even though Andy Green was, you know, considered the guy to be someone who could help these young kids get up, know their strengths and weaknesses early on in the process, and help them when they did get to the major league level. Just the performance and the level of energy being shown by the team after 4 years just didn't improve enough for the Potters to feel confident that he was going to be their guy that was going to get them to the postseason. You know, they hope their window opens next year. Again, they harbored some dreams the last 2 years. They weren't realistic. Next year's really the first year it becomes realistic, and they made the decision, watching this team play, that Andy Green was not going to be the guy to get them to the top there.
It's a weird situation when a perennial loser is a very desirable location. It's a great ballpark. They've got Machado and Hosmer, and then the youngsters and Tatis Jr. and Paddock and Mejia. You still got Renfro there. I mean, they've got some talent on that team, especially some good pitchers in the minors as well. And then the fan base and the media is not going to bite your head off down there. They're too busy, you know, booting a beach ball around. So is that maybe part of the problem?
Well, I think if you look back, I actually remember writing this when Andrew Green was hired in 2016. The Padres for a long time have been hiring first-time managers, you know, Green, Black, Bochy. You go back even prior to them. This is not an organization that has hired experienced managers. A lot of times, in some ways, it's been considered a training ground, a first job, and the manager goes on and gets another better job later. There's a long history of that. So I think there's a little bit of a mindset change now. You know, you mentioned the Padres being considered, you know, not having a lot of expectations. But look, the new owner, Ron Fowler, has come in and poured more money into the team in terms of free agents, in terms of player development than ever before. You know, San Diego is a much larger market than it's played in years past. And now there's money and there's expectations. And I do think the city of San Diego, you know, mentioned going and tossing a beach ball around, it's not because they don't care. It's because they've seen this movie before. Oh, we're in our fifth year of rebuilding and nothing's happening. Yeah, let me, you know, we're not going to waste our time and our money. There's other better things to do than go watch a team get its brains beat in. So I think now there is expectation, and especially with the Chargers gone, the Padres have kind of squandered a great chance to see San Diego, both the fan base as well as the corporate dollars available. And I think they've realized that, and they know they need to win now and soon, because they're missing a great opportunity for the franchise to really become kind of the standard bearer for the city in a way few other Major League Baseball teams can be in their cities, where they have other professional sports franchises to compete with.
Do you think Green went into this season thinking, okay, we got to get something done here, and my ass might be on the line?
I think there was definitely an expectation that they needed to be at least around 500. Again, you know, the Padres, you know, AJ Preller and some others have said, oh, we expect to compete for a wild card. That was not really realistic or reasonable, just given, you know, had a lot of pitchers that didn't have the innings build up yet. But there needs to be a step forward. You know, this is a team that's been in the 60s for the win range for a while. They need to get to 78 wins, 79 wins, hopefully 82 wins, 83 wins. And at one point, they looked like they were kind of on track for that. But the second half, the bottom has fallen out. And more than anything that was expected at the beginning of the season, watching the team playing, the quality of play on the field has just deteriorated. It was very, very clear that things were not healthy and the level of play was not acceptable, and they wanted to make a change.
When we look at the Bay Area teams, obviously the Giants at the trade deadline, they had their hottest July of all time, and it gave people a lot of hope. So Farhan Zaidi, who was brought in to swing that axe, he did to a certain extent, but he kept some prizes in Bumgarner and Will Smith, and we'll see if they get qualifying offers. And who knows, he might have got offered, you know, garbage at the trade deadline anyway, didn't want to give them away. But the Oakland A's with, you know, once again, a small budget and throwing old guys like Brett Anderson and a guy like Mike Fiers back out there, the Chris Bassetts of the world. Right now they're the top wild card, and Sean Manaea, since he's come back from Tommy John, has been beyond excellent. So they're trying so hard to host that wild card game because they're 0-2 on the road at Kansas City and New York last year, as we know. My question is, what's so tight with Tampa Bay and Cleveland, one of those teams is going to be on the golf course and will not get that single game. So do you see the A's as a team that is going to hold on, be a wild card, and maybe have the game at the Coliseum?
I do, and I think the biggest factor for that is, you kind of alluded to it, but they're getting their pitching back. You mentioned Sean Manaea's comeback has been excellent over his first three starts back. Frankie Montas is about to come back too, even just having that arm for the final week or two of the season. I think the A's, truthfully, are probably the most well-rounded of those three wild card contenders, though the Indians beefed up their offense at the deadline. Look, the A's are a good team. You know, 1-9 in that lineup is really, really solid. They had some good players they brought from AAA who have been a nice injection of energy in Sean Murphy and Seth Brown. The pitching's coming back. I really like the position the A's are in, not just to host the wild card game, but, you know, if they can win that one-game playoff, and again, that's always a little bit of a crapshoot of a game, they can do some damage. You know, the Yankees have some starting rotation problems. If they ended up playing the Yankees, if the Yankees could pull ahead of the Astros, I don't think the A's would get their brains beat in. You know, again, the Astros are a bit of a different story because they're just so good, but I don't think the A's are going to be an easy out. They've got a deep lineup. They've got a lot of arms they can turn to. I went on our podcast and said it. They really, really royally messed up trying to get fancy with the opener in their playoff game last year against the Yankees. They need to not do that again and just go with what got them there. As long as they do that, I like their chances. This is a very talented team. That this isn't a fluke. This is a very good, very dangerous team.
Do you think you got to get your mic on there?
Sorry about that. It's my first time on radio. I'm going to hit the microphone on and then speak to you. Do you think the A's learned their lesson, for lack of a better term, with the opener in the playoffs last year? Because it felt like a month and a half before the playoffs began, we knew there was going to be an opener if the A's made it to the postseason. Now, I don't hear that talk as much. Is that a reflection of them moving away from that, or just a reflection of we've got better starters that we feel comfortable with starting in playoff games now?
I think it's a reflection of them moving away from it. You know, I remember last year when the A's came down to Anaheim, the final series of the season. You know, they, I think, were 3-8 using the opener the final month of the season. Yeah. The players were openly talking about how they weren't comfortable with it. Bob Melvin kind of alluded to him feeling forced by it. And they had good pitchers who had gotten them there. I'm not saying you need to throw out, you know, Edwin Jackson and expect him to give you 7 innings, because even if he gives you 3 or 4, mm-hmm. it was just a smarter way to deploy the arms you had. Again, they haven't been screwing around with it this year. They've, I think, have a much better sense of, okay, you know, we have some pitchers who can do some things for us, even if, you know, Mike Fiers isn't a sexy name. Yeah, he can give you 4 or 5 decent innings and then turn it over to, you know, mix and match a lot of the other good arms you have in there. I do think they've learned their lesson just by the fact they're not messing with it here at the end of the year, and I think they're in a better position to do something in the postseason for it.
What do you think about some of the changes? You think about next year with 26-man roster and September call-ups, 2 guys. What do you think about that change? I mean, obviously it won't have as crowded as clubhouses as we're used to at this time of year.
Yeah, I think it's good in the sense that, look, the teams that are bringing in now, you know, are going to battle in September with 15-man bullpens and the games are dragging to 3 hours and 45 minutes. I mean, that will eliminate a lot of that, and that's a good thing from both the fan experience and just even for the players and managers sometimes at the end of a long season. But I would like to see, you know, some guys who might otherwise not get an opportunity, get rewarded for a good season. That's why I kind of preferred, I remember being at a press conference a couple years ago when Buck Showalter was still managing the Orioles, and he talked about, you know, keep it as a 40-man roster. You can bring up to 40 guys. They get the service time, but at the start of each series, you only pick which 25 guys are going to be active for that series. So you're still going into, you know, games with 25-man roster and then eliminate some of that 4 pitchers for 4 hitters, you know, craziness we see at this time of year, and, you know, games where there's 9 pitchers being used aside in some cases. So I would have liked to see them do that, but this is a solution, and I still don't get why the Players Association agreed to it, because it means a lot of their members are now never going to – well, I say a lot of their potential members are now never going to become major leaguers. But it was a solution they arrived at, and we'll see how it works out.
Do you see some teams clearly not wanting to promote guys when the rosters expand because it's going to cost extra money, hotel rooms, per diems, all that? There are some teams that would happily take that hit, and it's not that big of a hit financially, just so that some young guys, even if they're not planning on playing them much, just to kind of get their feet wet in the big leagues, just to see how it all goes down. And then there's some other teams that their thought process is, look, if he's not going to play, there's no reason to have him here. I disagree with that. I'm curious to what you think about it.
It really depends on the team and the player by player. You're right. You're not going to bring up your top prospect start his service time clock if he's just not going to play or if he's not ready. I mean, it's unfortunate we live in a game today where there's a lot of times the young player fans want to see brought up really isn't ready, but they assume it's a service time manipulation. Look, sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. I will say that I think I actually feel more for, you know, some of the guys who have toiled away in the minors for a long, long time, and they have a great year, and they get rewarded with a big league call-up, and sometimes it's the only, you know, 5, 6, 7 at-bats of their career, but that's pretty special. That's pretty awesome, and I think I feel more for those guys who now won't get that opportunity. There's going to be a lot less major leaguers than there have been, and again, from the Players Association perspective, I don't think that should ever be the goal, something they're trying to accomplish, and that's why I disagreed with it.
We know about the juice ball and the minors, 1,000 more home runs than last year. We know that Pete Alonso already has 50, and Eugenio Suarez, Cody Bellinger, Jorge Soler, they're on their way to 50. We saw Nicholas Castellanos hit his 57th double. That's the most by a right-handed hitter since 1936. So with all these offensive stats, I was floored when I read this stat about our old friend, a guy who I know and like, Sonny Gray. I didn't realize with the Reds, he made his 32nd consecutive start allowing six hits or fewer, which is a new major league record, even including openers. He was sharing that record with Nolan Ryan. I had no idea that Sonny Gray was on a roll like this. Did you?
Yeah, I actually just wrote about it over at Baseball America. We highlight, you know, some of the more interesting trends happening in Major League Baseball every week, and we call it 3 Up, 3 Down. I encourage you to check it out every week because we have some fun stuff like that in there. Look, Sonny Gray has been a really, really good pitcher for a long time who just had some injury issues and then was in a situation that didn't work for him in New York. This is not like some guy who came out of nowhere. He was a high first-round pick. He was a stud. He was a top young pitcher for a couple of years. Again, ran into some health issues and then ran into, you know, being a situation where something just didn't jive. But look at the whole of Sonny Gray's career. It's, you know, I think 4 or 5 good years and 1 or 2 years where things just didn't go great. I mean, this is a good pitcher. So, again, I think it's something where sometimes perceptions of players get warped by, you know, one bad year they've had recently. And again, they put him in a lower pressure environment in Cincinnati. He was able to get back with his old college pitching coach. And I mean, when Sonny Gray is right, he's a true front of the rotation pitcher. That's why the Yankees went out and acquired him and gave up a steep price to do so. It's good to see because this is the talent level Sonny Gray has. And it's, you know, it's always fun to see players succeed, not fail.
Did it again. Hey, Kyle. The A's, I don't believe, have used an opener this season, but they are doing something that they're calling piggybacking now. I'm sure you're familiar with it. You see it in spring training quite a bit. It's really not that different. It's almost a semantics thing, but the piggyback, you know, the idea is that you can have two starters pitch on the same day and keep them on the same rotation. If a staff has particularly young guys who are reaching, you know, maximum workload, that's one way to dial that back. Is this a sense that is the opener kind of starting to go away and they're just looking for something different to call it? Or do you believe that piggybacking is significantly different than an opener?
No, I mean, these are two very different things. Piggybacking has been really popular in the minor leagues for a lot of years. You know, young arms, you don't want to run them up too fast and risk them getting injured. There's a very different dynamic between, okay, someone goes and gets 4 outs and someone else comes in, pitches 1 inning or 2. And all of a sudden, you know, it's taken you, again, there are times where they'll use the second pitcher and let them go a little longer. But there's a lot of times the opener devolves into a bullpen game because a lot of times you're using the opener because the pitchers you have just frankly aren't good enough. They talk about it being a matchup thing, but a lot of times if you had starters good enough to get, you know, more than 9 outs, you would use them. I think with piggybacking, you are seeing it's more, okay, hey, you go 4, you go 3, and then let's get, you know, our closer in for the 9th inning. I do think it is a very different thing. I mean, it is a very different thing, and I have less of an issue with that. Again, the opener is something you do if you're a second division team or you're too cheap and you just don't have the arms and you're trying to string something together. You know, piggybacking is a little more useful, and you can still get through a game with 3 pitchers and not burn through your entire bullpen, which is better for you both in the short term and the long term.
Miami lost its 100th game, and that's not a surprise. Maybe a surprise is that the GM and the skipper, Don Mattingly, are going to stay around. But then again, knowing his relationship with Derek Jeter, maybe it's not a surprise, or could you say, well, that team, it was a fire sale. How are you going to blame the manager anyway? I know from his time in L.A., Mattingly sure had his critics when he was on a team that was spending money. Were you surprised by that extension?
Not necessarily. I mean, again, it's all about expectations. And, you know, Mattingly's been a fairly soothing voice in a very, very young clubhouse. I've been at a couple games, obviously, you know, covering baseball, and the Marlins are in town. And, you know, I think he's a guy who has the right attitude for these young kids and knows the growing pains they're going through. You know, he didn't take this job anticipating winning a World Series. So, he's a veteran guy who commands respect. I can see why they extended him. Now, I could have also seen why they might have said, hey, you know, there might be someone else who prefer to take us through the next stage of this rebuild. But on the whole, Mattingly and his demeanor and just kind of how he handles those young kids and where the Marlins are in the stage of their rebuild.
Last question for you. Dave Dombrowski let go in Boston, and it's funny. I read an article that La Russa will stay. I forgot that he was like a special advisor. Are you surprised? I mean, we did see John Farrell fired after he won a World Series. And so, I mean, the Red Sox had their greatest season in their history last year, but is it a what have you done for me lately type of thing?
Yeah, I think Boston, there's some pretty impossible expectations to live up to. You know, look, Theo Epstein was, you know, let go, but that came after he did win two World Series, but when they let him go, it was after 2011, one of the greatest collapses in baseball history. You know, Ben Cherington did get them that 2013 World Series, but he was let go in the midst of a second straight last place season. I mean, these guys were fired with the team on the downturn. You know, the Red Sox put together one of the greatest seasons in baseball history last year, and they're still on pace for, you know, 85, 86 wins this year. It was not unexpected that a lot of their pitchers would probably take a step back. I mean, that's what happens. The postseason's a grind. It takes a toll on your pitchers, and that's what makes it so hard to not just win a World Series, you know, 2 years in a row, but even get back to the playoffs after a World Series run. So I think it was surprising that they did it this year, even in the context of Boston and maybe having, you know, a track record of pushing out successful executives. And you mentioned John Farrell being pushed out as well. He did win World Series, but Boston had also failed to do much with two straight division championship winners, so they thought there was something they could do to get over the hump. Dombrowski is an entirely different situation, just given the success they had only last year. It's not like if they had that success and there were two or three disappointing years following that. Look, Boston's a pressure cooker, and they made a decision, as we sit on our podcast here at Baseball America. I can't imagine they're going to find someone who will do better than Dave Dombrowski did, you know, in 3 years. Look, the Red Sox were a last place team. They were coming off back-to-back last place seasons. They brought him in at the tail end of the second one. He took a last place team and turned it into a World Series champion in 3 years. Very few executives can do that or have ever done that. And I would not envy whoever the next general manager of the Boston Red Sox is trying to live up to that, knowing that that's what got the last guy fired.
That's Kyle Glazer, national writer for Baseball America. Follow him on Twitter at Kyle A. Glazer, G-L-A-S-E-R. And I'll say this, Kyle, I love the fact in this digital age and newspapers and magazines dying that you guys are still around. And when I hold one, it still looks and feels like the one that I held in high school. So thanks for that you guys are still plugging along there.
My pleasure. We're happy to be plugging along, and we'll continue to do what we've done for almost 40 years now.
Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate it. Kyle Glazer, everyone. And I love it, Herbs, when I talk to somebody that knows way more about baseball, because you and I know about baseball, but a guy like Kyle, he can diss all 30 teams, all 25 guys, probably all 40.
Oh, yeah.
Go off the 40, man. He knows the hot. If I would have asked him the Blue Jays, low A, top two pitchers, he'd be like, well, that's Bob Smith.
Yeah, and he's worried about whether they're going to be protected in the Rule 5 draft. That's the kind of guy who stays through Thursday of winter meetings week for the finale, which is the Rule 5 draft, which is maybe the most boring event in sports history.
Really? What about the minor league Rule 5? That seems even more boring.
Well, there's more action, right? But with the major league portion of it, you see, I don't know, maybe four or five guys sometimes, maybe fewer than that, actually get picked up. Because as you know, you got to stay with the team
right.
The whole year.
I want to say Roberto Clemente was a Rule 5.
Really?
I think he was.
I know that the last one I dealt with was Mike New. reliever for the A's.
Mike New,
he's a college coach somewhere now, right?
He pitched at Cal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is he coaching at Cal now, too?
Oh, man, it's funny. I interviewed Mike New a couple of years ago. He wasn't the manager of Cal. He's somewhere local, I think.
That year was just ridiculous. I mean, the guy, they didn't really have a use for him, but they didn't have somebody in their system that would be a better fit for that roster spot. So he was there all year, but he wasn't really part of the team.
You know, it's funny. The A's kept Nate Freiman the whole year when they got him off of the Strohs. And then how about the Marlins, a Rule 5 guy that stuck around and who honestly was pretty pathetic. But this team stuck with him because he was cheap, and that's the model of the team. And now he's playing well, and that's Mark Canha. Yeah. He's a Rule 5 guy.
I thought the A's were done with Canha like 4 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I don't think many A's fans wouldn't have had a problem with it.
Right.
He went an entire month without an RBI and batting under 100. I mean, he looked overwhelmed, and he would just strike out in bushels.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah. Now.
Really well liked in the clubhouse, by the way. He's one of those guys. I remember he did a. I don't know if it was you or Tony doing the A's pregame show, and it was out on site at the Coliseum in front of, you know, where the tickets are, the will call and all that. And that's where the game had set up. Mm. And here comes Mark Canha in full out. I mean, like, he just got off the field in batting practice and click, click, click. You can hear him spikes walking all the way across the parking lot. And in full uniform. How many big leaguers would do that? Walk out into the parking lot half an hour before the game to fulfill a radio obligation.
No, that wasn't me. But he is kind of a foodie as well. I like the fact that he's more known for playing baseball than being a foodie. Speaking of foodies, Tittle and Herbs will come right back. 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Urban and Tittle.
Nice choice. A little smooth groove there from Nash Solomon on the board. Rick Tittle and Michael Urban with you. We'll be here until 5 o'clock. The rest of the show is wide open until we go to Tommy and Steven. So, y'all's in your calls. Get in the queue, and we'll talk to you. What's the number again? 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. Chilton Auto Body text line is 95795. We will have some Michael Urban, good for ball, bad for ball. Mike New is the head baseball coach at Cal. I knew I interviewed him for something. I guess when Esker went back to Stanford.
That's right. It was Esker going from Cal to Stanford, right?
Right, because Esker was the shortstop on those championship teams with Brian Johnson and Paul Carey and Blackjack McDowell.
Marcus, the head coach, right?
Yeah, Mark Marquis, yeah, Sunken Diamond. From the 510, Rick T, what's up with Jarrell Cotton? He had the same surgery at the same time as Mania.
I mean, Pedro Jr.?
Sean Mania. I really like Jarrell Cotton, but his career ERA in the bigs is about 5.5, so he's not somebody. I mean, he comes back great, but he's not somebody I'm waiting with bated breath. Like, oh, I can't wait till Jarrell Cotton comes back. He's too young to give up on. They got him in the Reddick and Hill trade from the Dodgers. I'm more interested as when Grant Holmes is going to be ready. Would probably be that.
Pedro did him a disservice by saying he reminds me of me. Talking about a lock Hall of Famer, one of the most dominant pitchers in history. Comparing yourself to a kid? Kid's got no chance.
Potsy and P-Town says, shout out to Houston Street. You know, when the A's made that trade for Matt Holliday, the rental, and it was Cargo, that's the one that really hurt, was Carlos Gonzalez. I didn't blink when they traded Houston Street. He was so horrible by the time they got rid of him. Remember, he went from the College World Series with the Longhorns to when Octavio Dotel had elective Tommy John surgery because he knew the A's would pay for it, and then he got out. Houston Street came in. He was fantastic. I just remember him in the playoffs, and he just would just serve up. Time and his dad, James Street, former Longhorn quarterback back in the day. But yeah, he had a
dad's a bigger deal in Texas than he is.
Probably. Of course, his son made a lot more money.
Yeah.
But Angels and others. But
Rick, yeah. you just got asked out.
510 says Rick, the A's hosted Kansas City in 2014. What are you, stupid? That was at the K. Why do people text things that are completely wrong like that?
Just to get under your skin?
But it's a simple thing. If you don't know, you can just Google it.
But it's working.
This guy probably thinks, or gal, I remember the Royals being there. Yeah, during the regular season. Does he really think, you know what was terrible about that series at Kauffman? There are a lot of things. But they were wearing these hoodies that said, always October.
And it wasn't October yet, and they never played in October that year.
Very good, September 30th. The other thing is, not one, but two blown saves. Brandon Moss hit 2 3-run shots in that game, and then Doolittle. I remember he was warming up in the bullpen.
Brandon Moss.
They traded for Joey Wendell, by the way, to the Indians. But Sean Doolittle was warming up in the bullpen, and he looked in, and I said to the people I was watching with, I go, Doolittle's not ready. Look at him. He's spooked. His face was so red. I don't know. Pick an analogy. It was like and I just thought, he's a nervous wreck. It's like Liam Hendricks. A nervous wreck. And I have zero faith in that guy. I don't care what 159 average he had, ERA. But here's the thing. When we were talking with Kyle Glazer there from Baseball America, and he said the A's might do some damage in the playoffs. He said especially if they face the Yankees who have problems with their rotation. You think about Esteban Germán used to be on the A's.
I like Esteban.
But anyway, Germán, their starter is now, he's got some problems and he's been shut down. He and his 18 wins. But I hate saying this, but this is the truth, Michael Irvin. When it comes to the playoffs, my A's get intimidated by Yankee Stadium. They never played them in the playoffs during the Bash Brother years because the powers at that time in the East were Boston and Toronto. Mm-hmm. New York sucked. That was the Bobby Meacham, Matt Noakes, and then Mike Gallego Yankees.
Noakes.
Yeah, Cal Bear, catcher. Gallego was their shortstop at one point. But I think about 81, the strike season, and Goose Gaw. I think about the big three when they went there. And I think about last year. I said it before the season began. I go, whenever my A's go to Yankee Stadium in the playoffs, they get intimidated as all hell. And it happened again. And Chris Davis hit a home run late. That was about all the noise they made in that game.
How do you change that?
You just need somebody with grandes cojones to step up and get her done, whether that's...
Like Cespedes. Oh, wait.
Right. Like one of the Mats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of those guys. Or a guy who just doesn't care, like what Moss did at the K.
Yeah.
You know? But I hate admitting it. But they get shaky. And they look around, they go, oh my gosh, I'm in Yankee Stadium and it's the playoffs. Mm-hmm. What am I doing here?
Oh God, we're all going to die.
They're not saying that out loud, but that's the way it always happens.
Rick T, what's up with the Oakland A's pitcher, Jarrell Cotton? I guess your first answer wasn't enough.
It's the same guy tweeting it twice.
And also, who are you guys starting in an AL wildcard game?
It's the same answer I had last weekend, Sean Manaea. Now, Fires has had one bad start since May. You know what? This is another thing, Herbs, and this is bad for ball, maybe I should save it, but... Once again, this is one of my pet peeves in sports. It's when guys accept a different role or go to the bench, and then we try to canonize them. Like we did that with Iguodala and David Lee. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Can you believe he went to the bench without crying? That happened this week with Chris Bassitt, who doesn't get a lot of love and was up and down in the past few years. And at one point, he was told he was a reliever, and he's like, I don't think I'm a reliever, but I'll do it. Chris Bassitt has pitched very well for the A's this year. But with Manaea back, you think, well, who's out? Is it Homer Bailey? Is it Brent Anderson? No, it's Bassitt. You are now the long reliever. And I saw people in the media say, oh, my gosh, Chris Bassitt, what a guy. He said, whatever you need me to do. God, and what is this? You're going to make him Saint Chris?
Right.
We already have one of those.
For accepting your role. Wow. What a great guy.
I guess we're at the point now where we expect athletes to be so spoiled and reactionary and whiners.
Antonio Brown, anyone?
Well, that we're just flabbergasted that there wasn't a tantrum O'Neal over it. Wow, he didn't cry about it. Of course he's not happy. Nobody's happy when they're not playing. But just say Chris Bassitt is now in long relief. Don't say, what a gentleman, what a great... I saw that written and it just made my blood boil.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Chris Bassitt, you're lucky you're in the big leagues.
Right.
So shut up. I don't
shut up and take whatever role they give you.
And I don't blame him. I blame people in the media who write, what a great guy.
Right. Those are usually people that they got their job for reasons other than knowing the game inside and out. That's all. That's all I'll say about that.
Or we're just so acclimated to the point now where we expect a guy to say, to cry about it.
Rick, you got asked out. I don't think I've ever seen anybody on staff get asked out on a date on the Chilton Autobody text line. It says, and this is from the 510, Rick, can I take you to House of Prime Rib to hang out? Bill's on me.
I would, but I have to wash my cat, and the fur sticks to my tongue. That's an old Steve Martin line.
That's a good one.
No, thank you. Thank you for that. 650.
Are you going to go or not?
No.
Can I come?
No, I'm not Zach.
What does that mean?
One time, and I'm sure he doesn't, we're still friends. I'm sure he doesn't mind me telling the story, but a very highly talented guy who I think was great on the air, Zach Ryan. And we were doing a show together one night over at the old studio, South Market. And,
Tittle, I can't believe you told that story on the air.
Well, I'm telling it. Anyway, after the show, and we got off like at 10 or 11 at night or whatever, he's like, you want to get a beer? And I thought he like wanted to walk over to the W or something on the way to BART. I'm like, yeah, I'll get a beer with you. So I go downstairs and there's this car idling, kind of dark. You can't really see inside. Oh, there's the guy. This is your buddy? No, somebody just texted in. He said he'd be downstairs with beers. I go, you're getting in the car? Yeah, why not? I go, nice knowing you. You'll never be seen again. But he was very trusting.
Why not?
Somebody texted in, hey, I'll be downstairs with beers. He goes, cool. In a way, I admired that. But in another way, I'm like, hey, I have no interest. And he's like, it's free. I go, I can buy my own beer.
Yeah, if I can mitigate the chances of having my head cut off tonight, yeah, I'll pay for my own beer.
I remember that you said Mark Ellis was overrated. Take this.
After this comes from the text line too. I missed this one. After JD recited the whole Warriors 2018 season, yeah, there was a bunch of girls on the text line trying to give it up to him, just giving it to him. JD rolling in it.
Well, I don't think this
coming
was
coming out of his pocket.
This wasn't. No,
hold on,
guy,
don't step on that.
No, this guy wants to hang. This is a guy. He just wants to hang out at the House of Prime Rib. This isn't a date.
Sure it is. Don't sell yourself short, Judge. You're a tremendous slouch. Movie, quickly.
Do the Papa Drop, Zachariah. I don't know that one. Do you know that
Zachariah?
One?
Zachariah, no. I don't. Barry Zito and his cojones beat Clemens in Game 4 in 2000, Rick.
So? What's on, that I don't know. Apropos to anything?
It's apropos to the Chilton Autobody text line.
By the way, it was the
good question.
2018-2019 season. That really is something that I'm not saying we downplayed it, but we didn't talk enough about what we were referring to with JD. That's John Dickinson, our own guy here. He was on the air with a couple other guys. It was, was it Goo and Steinmetz, I think, that day. And or Bonte, I think.
Correct.
It was. Yeah. And he said, well, they started off here, and then they went, and then he kept going, then he kept going. And he had memorized all 82 games in order, home and away.
Just the schedule. He'd memorize the schedule, or did he have like...
He didn't memorize it. He just knew it because he's good with stuff like that. He's a savant that way.
So we're talking like three quarters of the way into the season. You can say, hey, JD, who's the leading scorer for the Warriors in game two?
I don't know if he knows that, but he goes, then they went to Toronto, then they came back to Atlanta, but then that was, of course, the road trip where they went to Houston and then
that's
Dallas,
the problem.
Came back against the Clippers, and then they had the Lakers, and then they went to the Pistons. If you... I cover the Raiders, right, pre and post. If you ask me to do all 16 games right now, right, there's no freaking way.
Really?
I'd have a good guess. I'd probably wait.
Are they go to Indianapolis and then they...
There's no way. And I've looked at it 100 times. There's no way I could give you all 17 weeks and all that.
Yeah, have you ever seen a PGA golfer when they're asked to go to the press tent, and oftentimes they're asked to like walk us through your round. And you figure the guys, if he's being asked to go to the press tent, he shot in the 60s, right? Low 60s and mid 60s. And they can tell you every single shot, everyone from memory. And I thought, that's crazy. I wanted to see, it was while I was working on my book on Hudson, Mulder, and Zito. And I knew that Mulder is a golfer, and I knew I could relate to him. Like, have you seen this? He said, yeah. Can you do that as a baseball player? And he says, try me. And I got my notebook, and it was... third or fourth inning, I just picked a random, you know. First guy walked, second guy, and then he picks up the narrative from there. Like, as soon as I said first guy walked, he gave me not just what that guy did, But what pitch he threw him, what sequence, and what he was trying to get accomplished with each one. I said, you can do that with every one of your 27 outs. He goes, we're 37 guys I faced. If I gave up 10 hits, yeah, I can do that with every single guy. That's crazy memory, dude.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco Radio.com sports station. I heard an interesting thing on a podcast, because people make fun of me at my other job and this job, because I've been doing the other show 18 years, that somebody asked me why I had never had Steph Curry on the show, and I'm like, I'd love to get him on. And afterwards, I go, Rick, you had Steph in his rookie year. And then the guy who just won the heavyweight title, I'd like to get him on. He goes, Radio Row, he sat down with you for a half hour. So I think it's CTE, but I heard something. That's an easy way out, right? But the funny I heard something on a podcast with Conan O'Brien and Howard Stern, that they both forget people that they've interviewed. And Conan had an interesting take on it. He said, when you're interviewing somebody, and that's all you do is you meet different people and interview different people all day, when you interview them, that's their moment.
Right.
They're on the air talking about what they want to do. But for you, it's just your job. Now, I don't think that's any excuse for forgetting, but I do kind of see that angle a little bit. Right, because you come in and you got five interviews that day, right?
Right, sure.
And here it's, you know, beat writers and stuff. So, like, how many times have we interviewed Connor Letourneau or Mark Medina? You'd say at least 100 times each, right? Because we have those guys.
Medina, for sure.
Multiple shows.
Medina went national, by the way.
Remember I said he would?
I said that.
I said that. Wait, where did he go?
Where did he go? USA Today.
I told him 100 times that you're going national, and he said, be my agent.
Oh, see, he said the same exact thing to me. Wow, we're getting played.
We're not getting played. We both saw it in him.
I was making it up. I was just trying to ingratiate myself with a guest.
408, this is the San Jose OG. He said, I heard the NBA Memory Miracle by JD live. I had to pull over.
It has a name now?
While in Chicago, I guess so.
The NBA Moment Memory Miracle by JD Live.
I had to pull over in Chicago on the way to the airport. I would rather be late and listen to history. Wow, I missed a flight. 707 says, hey, Tittle, what's your other job? It's a syndicated show. You mean it's pretty easy. All you got to do is look at my Google or Twitter or whatever.
Lazy.
It is.
It's called Google.
Yeah, I've been doing that show 18 years. But I don't talk about it on the air. You know, this is interesting about Bruce Bochy. He's got his 2000th win, Herbs. And there was a time in June where we thought maybe he wouldn't get his 2000th win because the Giants were so horrendous. But now he is in the 2000 win club, which used to have 10 members. Now it has 11. He's not going to catch Leo Durocher, who only has 8 more.
Doesn't need to. All those other 10 guys are in the hall.
They're all in the hall. It's a good point. Cornelius McGillicuddy, Connie Mack, not only is he number one, he's number one by almost 1,000 more wins than number two. Connie Mack, 3,731 wins. John McGraw, 2,763. Interesting enough, we're talking A's and Giants, respectively, in their original homes. But Connie Mack was a manager slash owner for 50 years. Mm. And they had some great teams. You look at the Coliseum, you see a lot of World War I, 1916, 1918. But he had some horrendous teams as well when he was in Philadelphia.
Was he a suit guy the whole time? When did managers start wearing uniforms?
That's a great question.
It used to be...
John McGraw wore a uniform. I think Connie Mack was one of the few who didn't. And he wore that sort of straw hat.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of his fly lid. You know,
Mike Nolan's fly suit.
Bobby Cox is number four on this list. And it's funny, he always seemed like kind of a curmudgeon. And years ago, I had Bobby Cox on the show. He couldn't have been the more like gregarious, jovial, just great guy. Every game he ever managed in professional baseball, he wore spikes.
Spring is a time of renewal. So why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.